it's really realigning the narrative and the conversation about that shared commitment. And that shared commitment is one everybody can subscribe to, which is freedom, a sense of safety, justice, not exclusive to a person or a race or an ethnicity.
This is a place where we talk about belonging. Welcome to the In-Betweenish. I'm Beatrice Noor, your host. Raised in 3 cultures, 2 religions, and 4 languages, trust me, I get the chaos. On the show, I chat with those who have lived that in-betweenish life, a foot here and a foot there, building bridges across cultures, and of course, the age-old quest to finding home. Welcome back to part 3 of the On Palestine series on the in-betweenish. This is the final episode of the series, and today we will be tackling a way forward with vulnerability and honesty. This was a difficult conversation, but I think it's very important to hear from our same 3 guests, Zina, Faisal, and Noor, in terms of what they think is needed to forge a better way forward. If you haven't tuned into part 1, where we tackle Palestinian culture and identity, and part 2, where we cover the Palestinian struggle for liberation, then I highly recommend that you listen to those first, as it will put this episode into perspective. Please note that our guests are expressing their personal views and opinions based on their exposure and lived experience. Before we get into it, I want to make my position clear. I don't think anyone, anywhere, should be killed, maimed, be imprisoned, or taken hostage for belonging to a certain group, or holding specific beliefs, or for living on the wrong side of the border. And this goes for both Palestinians and Israelis, for Muslims, Jews, and Christians, and any other religion, ethnic group, or nationality. We all deserve the freedom to be and exercise our cultures and identities with dignity. Unfortunately, Palestinians have long been deprived of this right because of the Israeli occupation. You won't be hearing much from me throughout this episode, but at the end, I will share my limited perspective on a way forward. I say limited because I'm not a political analyst or an expert in the subject, nor is In-Betweenish a political podcast. Today you'll be hearing from our same 3 guests, Zina, who is part of the Palestinian diaspora and was born and raised in the Arab world in Jordan, Faisal, who is also part of the Palestinian diaspora, raised predominantly in the West during his younger developmental years in Canada and then later in Qatar in the Gulf region. And Noor, the last guest you'll be hearing from, was born and raised in Palestine, in the West Bank. Please note that some details and names have been altered for protection and privacy. In this episode, I start off by asking Zina, Faisal, and Noor what part of their identity is still in conflict. At this point, I want to point out that Zina is a somatic therapist, and I think her personal journey is reflected in her answers throughout this episode.
Probably a lot of my identity is still in conflict, and that's kind of my life endeavor and part of my work, actually. But I think when it comes to like Palestine, 2 things really come to mind and heart. Is the sense of, will I ever belong anywhere if that's never an option? I just wonder if somewhere I settle into will really meet or fill that like hole of not being in Palestine. And I guess a part of me is just trying to work with that, because I'm always kind of working through things that always will have a hold on me, and how can I not be sort of, how am I practiced like non-attachment to a lot of things. And so I think this part of is always really stays with me as like so ingrained, and it's hard for me to see who, if I'm not Palestinian, then who am I in that way? And I think it goes to everything. And I've gotten so comfortable with taking off many masks that I carried for so long, and I have no problem like believing in something for so long. And then in the face of new information and ways of being and evolution, I change and evolve. And I think that's the beauty of it. But perhaps what always stayed constant is my Palestinian identity. And so, you know, I took off the atheist mask. I took off the like boss ass lady woman mask. I took off this very like corporate culture, all of these different masks that I held with like so much pride for so long off. And there's been such liberation in taking a lot of these things off. And I'm not saying I want to take the Palestinian, and I don't think it's a mask per se, but it's just more of a, I really wonder, who would I be without it? And is there a way for me to like feel whole? Because right now it doesn't feel, I don't feel whole. As I feel there's a big gap, right? And it's really this sense of home that I've learned to find within myself, regardless of where I am. And I think that's really my ultimate home. And I have moments and days and months where it's like there's such a deep-seated feeling of home inside of myself. But then there's always that lingering sense of the surrounding that just, you know, is that cherry on top. And that cherry on top feels to me like the Palestine that I never can be in. So I think that part is perhaps something I'm constantly like working through. And then the other thing is, and I've been in like conversation with myself about that, is the sense of victimhood. So I think on a personal level, a big part of my journey as an individual is really excavating all the areas in my life where I lay victim, whether it's to like disease or to like a person or to a situation or to a system and all of these things. And it's, I try to like take away that like energy of like, if only, and all of the things outside of me are wrong and I for me and all of these things. And I try to excavate all the ways that part of me is still hidden. And it allowed me to step into so much of my agency, whether it's like taking charge of my health and trusting my body to heal on its own, whether it's taking charge of, you know, an agency in the way I show up in the dynamic that plays out between me and people, partners, friends, the way I show up in harmony with and non-opposition in the systems and situations and places that I find myself in. And I think with Palestine, I think there's the perpetrator is so heinous and cruel. And yet, I continue to find ways where I show up in my fight for Palestine, not from a place of being a helpless victim, because when I do that, then I hand all power to this external power over my own freedom, over my own self-determination. And so it's a larger discourse, I guess, but it's just trying to find ways in which I lean into that struggle. And it's so important for me. And it's something that I probably will fight for my entire life in my line of work and in my personal way of being and all of that. But is how do I approach it from a place that doesn't hand over power over my liberation and salvation to the person that is refusing to heal their own trauma, which is, you know, all the Zionists that are exercising all of that. They're refusing to look inside and just constantly operating from a place that is defended and fearful, and choosing to pass on all of that to people that don't deserve it. And so I don't want to be like that. And no Palestinian wants to be like that, I don't think. It's a constant practice of not being that helpless victim and handing power to them, and really making the fight of one of self-agency and self-determination. And it's really about liberation and justice for everybody. And the person that loves to perpetuate themselves in victimhood won't see it that way, because they don't understand that nobody is responsible for your freedom but yourself. And that starts with healing the conflict inside of you, but also taking charge of your life and how you live. And I think that's like the part that I kind of constantly really think about. And I choose very carefully in a lot of ways of making sure that despite this perpetrator, despite all of that, that we're not helpless victims. Palestinians are, in fact, very courageous. So many still hold, despite all of it, their, at least between them and themselves, their willingness and their agency for self-determination and for life. It goes back to that nuance of what are you fighting? Are you fighting another, or are you fighting for your own salvation and freedom? And I think that's the most fundamental nuance in between how Zionists are fighting and how Palestinians are.
Now we'll hear from Faisal.
What part of my identity is still in conflict today? I don't know, you know, like I've done, ever since I was 18, I did 5 years of therapy when I was 18. And then I discovered like more kind of alternative things. Like I started doing hypnotherapy, and then I started doing different healing. And then I trained myself as a healer. So I've been a healer for 5 years, practicing Theta healing. So all of this work, and this is something that I've written about in my master's, about the conflict of the conflict. This understanding of, through a Western lens of individualism and of, you know, working on yourself and really you being the center of your world, you as an individual being the most important thing in your personal world. And this is your world is you, basically. And I had this struggle between me as an individual, me trying to work on all of that trauma, whether in my life, but also through all of that esoteric stuff for my ancestors as well, and working on my ancestors and working on clearing that trauma in my life and in all of these past generations. And the parallel of that, of my current situation as a Palestinian, who still is suffering from erasure, who still is suffering from displacement, who still is linked, yani, this is my personal experience, but also linked to millions of people around the world and in Palestine itself, suffering from an occupier, suffering from the world being generally either complacent or complicit in what's happening to them. So I've had these two parts of myself, like the pacified part, the peaceful part, the part that's accepting of everything as it is and trying to strive for this personal balance and this balance in my life and trying to release all of this trauma and become this, you know, light, integrated being. And the other part, that is the real world, that is the world that we live in, that unfortunately I don't live in a bubble, you know, I don't live in my mind, I don't live limited to my thoughts. I am confronted, I am a human being, I live a physical existence, I am confronted to others in situations that are traumatizing, even on a micro level, that are a reflection of the state of the world when it comes to Palestine, of indifference and of attack at worst. So this is the struggle. This is the struggle. The struggle is having to exist in a world that is oppressive towards you and having to navigate both of these things, having to navigate yourself as an individual and having to also have to deal with the external factors. And eventually you, like I at least, eventually I try to equalize and I try to accept everything for what it is. And I try to understand that one doesn't negate the other. Like, you know, me having worked on myself all of this time and, you know, therapy and all of these different things doesn't exclude my anger or doesn't exclude the reality of my physical existence. It's okay for it all to exist together. But it's difficult. Like, it's something that, yeah, I wrote about it in my master's, you know, in my writings of how does it work? How do you navigate all of these things? And then what I discovered is that there's nothing to navigate. I am Palestinian no matter what I do. And healing is not me erasing my Palestinian identity. It's not me making it smaller or making it more palatable for others. It's just me working on myself on a personal level. And it's not exclusive to all of the other experiences that come with being Palestinian. Like, it's not because, for example, I work on myself and I work on, you know, my mind and I work on my relationship to my identity and others and all of this stuff. And I work on my resentment. It's not because I work on that that I will forget my Palestinian identity, because my Palestinian identity actually transcends those feelings. My Palestinian identity, sure, there is a contemporary Palestinian identity that has this Nakba origin story, but our world did not start in the Nakba. Like, the year zero of my identity is not the Nakba. This is not who I am. I'm not limited to the Nakba. I'm not limited to the aggression that was imposed on me. I'm not limited to the colonization. This is not what defines my identity. What defines my identity is the rooting in my land from before 1948, is the rooting of my grandparents, is the rooting of my great-grandparents. This is what grounds me in my land. Grounding in my land comes from my ancestors. This is not my origin story. My origin story is not 1948. My origin story is not Israel. My origin story is not what Israel has made me or what they want me to be. This is not my origin story. And this is also something that's very important for us to remember as Palestinians, is that our life didn't start as people who have been oppressed. This is not where we started. We are rooted in this land. We have culture. We have culture that goes beyond Israel and our relationship to the occupier. And this is how I was able to make peace with that. And especially with what we're experiencing now, I think we have to transcend guilt and use our privilege to speak and to share and to talk and to question and to encourage people to learn and to encourage people to see things. Even though I don't think it's important for Palestinians to be actively trying to change anyone's mind, But just using our platform and using our privilege and using our place in the world to talk about what's happening and still talk about what's happening is important. Just the fact of acknowledging my privilege and making use of that privilege. Why would I not? If I have the opportunity to say something, why would I not?
Next up, we have Noor.
So that was one of the ones I felt I maybe wouldn't necessarily answer. And my initial response was, I don't have a conflict. I know who I am and I feel quite strong in my identity, even if I've, for example, had a more privileged background than other people in Palestine. I don't think that takes away from my Palestinianness. It can give me a sense of guilt, maybe not a sense of conflict. But I think maybe something I struggle with, I'm aware of what things I think about when I'm in the West and what things I think about when I'm in Palestine. So in the first weeks of things happening, a big thing affecting me emotionally was seeing like the newspapers on the street, the British newspapers, and how they cover it. And I spent a lot of time, mental time and mental energy and emotions devoted to thinking about this. When I really resent that I even care about a Western response. And obviously this happened in Palestine too, like they protested against the BBC in Ramallah. So it's not purely Western. But I just know that if I was in Palestine, I'd be having much, much more nuanced discussions and my feelings would be more nuanced. And that's why I'm struggling to be here a little bit, because again, like I said before, I feel like my conversations and my actions become a lot more surface level because you're dealing with a much lower level of knowledge and engagement. So I can feel guilty about my feelings and my thoughts, and I feel I shouldn't think like this. And if I was in Palestine, would I be thinking like this? And it's definitely not a productive way for me to think. And it definitely comes out of having been in the West, gotten Westernized, come back to Palestine, didn't like my Westernization. So I'm cautious to like hold on to who I am, but I am trying to be nice to myself and understand like I'm in the UK. This is the context I'm operating under. It's most productive if I'm thinking about these things. I don't need to force myself into a framework that I'm not currently living in. So that's at least what I've been experiencing in the last 2 months. And I'm hoping to go back to Palestine soon so I can reevaluate things a little bit. I think it's also like my identity. It has a lot to do with the fact that I grew up like in a place in the West Bank that is slightly shielded from the worst of it. So you know you're Palestinian and you obviously your life is affected by the occupation and determined by it, but you can have a slightly non-violent daily life. But in the end, there are instances that always bring you back to reality. So my cousin was imprisoned by the Israelis for doing activist things, not even intense stuff like just social media organizing, when I was 12 or 13. And I remember my dad didn't tell me in the moment. He told me the next day when he was driving me to school, because he kind of didn't want to tell me to not hurt my feelings. And I was like, why would you not tell me, you know? But I think he wanted to shelter me. And she was only in for like a few weeks, like it wasn't the most intense, but like they did go into my uncle's house in the middle of the night, ransack the house. She came back like super skinny, you know, all of that. So that was quite formative. When I was 15 or 16, a boy that was on the periphery of my social circle, though he was in another school, was at a protest and he got shot and killed with live bullets by an Israeli soldier when he was 16 at the time. I think I was 15. And that was a big like shock to our like my little community. When you grow up in Palestine, even if you're in a more sheltered place, violence is always happening. Shit is always happening. Someone's always dying or getting arrested, or a house is being demolished, or a house is being taken away. you're a bit numbed out, like ever so slightly. Obviously, it still hurts and you still care every time. And I've literally cried every day since October 7th. I'm very aware that I don't have the right to despair. Whenever, Yanni, you see a lot of the people in Gaza, they always say, like, we're not shaken. We're here. We're not shaken. So how do I have a right to be shaken when I'm here in the UK living my life on my laptop? Obviously, part of this is like survivor's guilt, whatever. But I do think it's unproductive to fall into such despair. You have to do something with your grief.
The next question I ask is, what is different about this generation of Palestinians, namely millennials and Gen Z? Keep in mind that Zina and Faisal are both millennials, or part of the Y generation, same thing, and Noor is part of Gen Z.
The mother that birthed my parents, my grandparents, at a time of mass ethnic cleansing and displacement. And then there's my generation, where perhaps I speak for the diaspora, because obviously it's a different experience for Palestinians on the inside and refugees that are still in refugee camps all over the Arab world. But we don't have the like lived experience of displacement, but we have the lived experience in our tissues from generations of displacement. And that in of itself is a whole different way of experiencing Palestine and experiencing displacement altogether. Because it's less of a cognitive sort of like memory and details, but something that lives in our very tissues. But it's also important to distinguish between people in the diaspora that have left and established a life and live a rather comfortable life, where they got citizenships in the respective countries that they migrated to, and have now built a solid base and everything like that. And then there's the diaspora that are still in refugee camps, which is a huge population, right, in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Syria. And that's a very unique experience, because their displacement hasn't been, there hasn't been a final solution yet. They're still in transition. They're still in between. And so it's very different, because they're still in that, whether they're the ones that got displaced or it's their children that were born in the refugee camp themselves and have, that's all they've ever known, there's still that sense of where to, are we going back? Are we staying here? How do we get out of this space in between? I mean, most of them don't even have a passport, right? They have a wathiqa, which is like a document that speaks to their status, but is a very difficult and inconvenient and, yeah, stateless. I think it's important to distinguish that, because it's easy for me to come from this place and speak to that longing and that desire from a place of there's a very well-established life for me and my family here in Jordan. I'm very grateful for that. And there's a choice should the right of return come, right? But for someone in the refugee camps, they are still in that process, right? They haven't been settled anywhere else. And I think because of, and again, I speak as someone in the diaspora with a family that managed to establish a life and a good life outside, is that a lot of our generation now, Palestinians and otherwise, have entered in a stage of the world in which there's a lot more focus and understanding and awareness of our inner world. We're not just outwardly focused. There's an understanding of you know, our emotions and how we feel and our and trauma and transgenerational trauma and this question of identity and this very question that you and I are having and all of these things, right? And so that privilege and that luxury allows us to maybe change the discourse and the way we go about liberation. And our capacity is much bigger and larger to understand what it would take without losing sight of the foundation of justice and freedom and equality, right? So perhaps we're more in touch with those like higher level, maybe spiritual values of peace and love and all of that, but without losing our feet on the ground, without losing the pragmatism that needs to come with that, without losing the what makes that possible. It's so easy to jump to that and ignore what are the seeds and the foundation and the ground that you need to plow to make those higher level virtues possible. The fundamental thing is, and which is what we carried from our parents, is this really, this is about like freedom. This is about seeing me as an equal human. But I guess we, the way we go about it is just the phrasing and the way we speak of it and the capacity to hold complexity is different, just naturally because of the times that we've been born into and the access that we have in terms of technology and all of these different things that just naturally infuse our struggle with a lot more, a lot more flavor.
Here's Faisal.
I think what's different is that we have the internet and we have so many resources at the tip of our finger, and we're able to see the resources and we're able to, you know, read the articles and see the films and do all of this stuff. We're able to connect as well. I don't think, you know, I have brothers who are 20 years older than me. I don't think that they had that opportunity. You know, even before visiting Palestine, I had connected with Palestinians in Palestine through, you know, through it was the beginning of Instagram, but like through Instagram, and till this day, you know, being curious about what's going on and using Instagram. I mean, back then it wasn't to see horrible images, but it was to see, you know, the life of someone that could have been me in Palestine through their posts and understanding what they're doing and, you know, what's going on with their life on a daily level. So I think this is what's different. It's being able to connect with other Palestinians around the world. It's being able to connect to our history and our story. And it just made it so much easier to do that today with our accessibility to information.
Now let's hear from Noor.
For me personally, I think I grew up under such political stasis and nothing happening. I remember Palestine trying to accede to the UN in 2011 to like get recognized as a country or like as a member state. Failed, you know, American negotiations in my youth, peace process. Like it just felt there was nothing happening in my life. We were in such a like purgatory type of situation. And I think it's made my generation fed up, and I think it's made us more radical. Also, my generation like grew up with Gaza in the way that it is. People older than us got to go to Gaza, engage with it as a place. 2006 was siege, but 2008 was the beginning of, you know, the every few years violence that we know now. But I don't know. I think, yeah, we grew up under this political stasis, under the failure of the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian leadership to get us anywhere. Seeing any Palestinian movement that tries to, or Palestinian individual or intellectual, get locked up, get punished. I think we were in a stasis and it felt nothing was happening. And I think it's made us more radical and more eager for change. And like I said, we don't have these hopes on the international community anymore. We know that this isn't, or NGOs or whatever, like the West Bank is overrun with INGOs. What the fuck are they doing for us? Nothing. All of their European headquarters couldn't make a proper statement when all of this stuff happened. So I think we're more, we trust more in each other. We're not waiting. We're not waiting for anyone. Yeah. Again, like I can't say this as a whole, as a generalization, but this is what I felt recently. A big part of my experience of being Palestinian is the fact that we're governed by the Palestinian Authority, which very much can further the goals of the Israeli occupation. Like, it's a very corrupt system. It doesn't help. It doesn't help us. It doesn't work for us. And that's a big part of my identity and experience and political issue. And this is also like the thing of romanticization. Like, I'm under no illusions about, you know, these sorts of things. I don't think every Palestinian is an amazing hero. I'm aware that not everyone is helping us. You know what I mean?
Lastly, and perhaps this is the most important question of the series, I asked Zina, Faisal, and Noor, what is a way forward from here? First, we will hear from Zina.
I mean, I could tell you, you know, decolonization and building a one equal state, removal of, like, obviously occupation and apartheid, which is part of the decolonization narrative, and addressing the right of return and all of these different things. So that's there and present and part of it. But I'm no political analyst, and I don't really, like, not going to get into that. Definitely, as a very imminent way forward, is to stop that genocide and to recognize Palestinians as equal human beings. And with that, you know, the siege and the occupation and apartheid, and then whatever unfollows from that is left to experts, I guess. But I think what is happening in Palestine is not complicated. What is complicated and what requires everybody to do their own work is aligning on that shared commitment and moving through any roadblocks towards that. And as a Palestinian, it's learning to really show up in the way that is in integrity to my values, and as a human primarily, in how I want to fight this fight. And I think every Palestinian is trying in some way or another to come back into that kind of inner compass of what is this really about. And everybody shows up in service in ways that that feel true to them. And I think the way forward is for everybody to really show up from that place of integrity and not minimize the value of what they bring to the overall tapestry of liberation. I think the way forward is also to recognize, to understand the experience of the other. You can understand it, but not justify its actions. And so I speak for me personally, is that there is an aspect of me, despite it being very hard, that is attempting to understand, because it's so baffling that this is happening. Like, I just don't understand how they're capable of doing what they're doing. And so a part of me is like, how far do you have to stray? How defended do you have to be? How caged in into narratives and coping ways that you have to be to exercise that on another people? And so a part of me is attempting to understand that, but understanding is very different than justifying. And so I will have capacity to understand so that we move forward. But that's work everybody should do, and namely Zionists. And people in Israel. And it's beautiful work that you've seen in so many like Jews around the world that have done. It's healing work. We all know on a fundamental level what is it to be human and what values that carries and the equality of human life and all of these things. And then so much gets in the way of that. And it's on everybody to understand their own baggage of what got in the way of that. I can't do that work for them. And they can't do that work for me. It's really realigning the narrative and the conversation about that shared commitment. And that shared commitment is one everybody can subscribe to, which is freedom, a sense of safety, justice. Not exclusive to a person or a race or an ethnicity. And so I think if I were to kind of add, it's just really that aligning of that commitment. And then what in my somatic work we say, walking the dog backwards, is like, okay, that's the shared commitment. What gets in the way of that? And that is on a systemic level, on an interpersonal level, and on an individual level. And it's both a collective and an individual endeavor. But I think that's really the way forward. And there's so many roads into that. Like there's roads on a policy level on all of that. There's on a healing and trauma and transgenerational trauma level. There's on a discourse and literature and shared experiences and so much. And everybody, I guess, contributes in their own way.
Let's hear what Faisal has to say.
It's quite a scary question, to be honest. It's quite a scary question because I hope we won't be disappointed, as we always are. I'm hopeful. I want to be hopeful. I think it's important to be hopeful, but I really don't know. I think the way forward is to keep talking about Palestine, just keep talking about Palestine and keep telling people what's going on and keep sharing and keep having conversations and hopefully that will amount to something. I mean, what's going on now is like nothing that I have ever experienced. I mean, I'm only 35. It's not like I'm, it's not like I lived the Nakba hours. But even I was speaking to my mom the other day and she also feels that way. And I think all of us feel that there's a real shift in what's happening today. The positive shift in people, like the general public, acknowledging what's going on. And I've never seen so many marches and so many people blocking roads and going to protest in the Congress and going to protest in like different places. And we have to acknowledge as well the, other people who are also using their privilege to speak up are Jews. And that's so important. And I'm so moved and I'm really proud of what they're doing. And I think it's people are using their privilege. People are finally waking up to our humanity and to their humanity. They're finally connected to their own humanity and understanding that what's happening in Palestine could happen to them because we're all human beings. And I think the way forward is for people to keep connecting with their empathy and for this connection to their empathy to not accept what's going on. Because if you connect to your empathy, you cannot accept what's happening. You cannot accept. So the way forward is for people to step out of their individualism, step out of this Western construct of society, of us being little people, like little individual people living individual lives. Because this is very untrue. I mean, now in healing, you realize that what am I? If I live an average of 70 years in the grander scheme of things, I'm nothing. These 70 years are nothing in the grander scheme of things. So why do I want to spend 70 years of my life being an asshole? You know, like, why do I want to be a horrible person on my time on earth? Yani, on the one hand, yes, maybe it could be the fetus where you're like, oh, like, what is my contribution to humanity in the grander scheme of the timeline? But also, what is your contribution to humanity on the grander scheme of the timeline? Like, what are you actually doing in your life? So yeah, that's the way forward.
And last but not least, here's Noor.
I think, like, on a broad level, it needs to be, like what I've mentioned before, just a disinvestment from these Western frameworks that are placed upon us. We've seen what even what the Geneva Conventions, how far they've go. We've seen the UN, how far it goes. We've seen Western media, the New York Times, quote unquote, free press, how it goes. I think we need to fully, like, intellectually, emotionally and financially, where possible, disinvest ourselves from these frameworks, because they don't serve us and our liberation is not going to come from there. Our liberation comes in collective power between each other and solidarity. Look at Yemen, they're stealing Israeli boats. That's done way more than anything in weakening the Israeli apartheid system, in that it's a direct hit to their economy, than any UN report saying how Palestinians need more economic sovereignty, you know? This, to me, is the way forward. We need to invest in ourselves and not look for the West or for these other people to save us. We need to study past liberation movements like Algeria, like Vietnam, and like all these places that we're fighting against like a war machine. The Viet Cong were definitely viewed as terrorists by the Americans. So in the end, no matter what resistance Palestinians take part in, it's always going to be dubbed terrorism. And forget Hamas, because there's been other groups like the PFLP, you know, they're quite secular. You can't even put an Islamic terrorist label on that. And even when you do non-violent resistance and whatever, they still imprison you. They still, what people want to do BDS, you're not even allowed to boycott anymore. So again, we can't try and fit into these Western frameworks, because they exist to stop our evolution and to stop our progression and to stop our liberation. Which again, as I mentioned earlier, like, I don't have the anti-Semitism debate. I'm not convincing anyone that I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm not having the terrorism debate. I'm not doing this anymore, because these aren't the frameworks that I operate under, and I don't want to give them power by engaging with them. I think that's important for me to do, but I do think, for example, like, Western people have a duty to target those narratives and disprove them among their peers. There is a place for that, and it is necessary. Not everyone can choose to fully disengage. We'll make no change then, and it's akin to, you know, cancel culture or whatever. But me personally, as a Palestinian, I'm not doing this anymore. Mohammed Al-Kurd writes about this a lot. He's so well spoken, he's incredible. And he doesn't try and be polite, he doesn't play the games, he doesn't, and it's so much more effective than trying to, you know, be the cute Palestinian spokesperson. He has two really incredible, strong articles that I'll link to you that you can put. Yeah, here's a great one. I'm going to send it to you. Jewish settlers stole my house. It's not my fault they're Jewish. That talk a lot about, you know, sanitizing Palestinian language and, you know, how we try and fit into these frameworks and how we need to disinvest from them. To me, this is the way forward. And to move from the NGOization of the Palestinian cause, and we're like a charity case that people need to help, and for it to be treated like a political struggle against imperialism, and that is always battled in the same way.
I've kept back from sharing my personal views throughout this episode, as I wanted to create space for my guests to share their views without my constant commentary in your ears. But now that we've reached the end of the episode and series, I want to also share my views on a way forward as someone external who is neither at the receiving end of the violence nor perpetrating it. At my very core, I am and have always been a pacifist. I don't think violence is the answer. But I also realize how incredibly privileged I am to say that. And if someone were coming into my home in the middle of the night to pull my family members and myself out of bed to displace us and make us homeless, maybe my views on this would change and I would fight back for my right to safely live in my home with dignity and in peace. I think it's very telling that two of our guests are healers, and that was not intentional. Actually, they don't even know each other. And it's also not how I met or was introduced to either Faisal or Zina. But I think there must be something to this. I think personal healing and healing generational trauma should be a part of the discussion, as we're intricately linked to our ancestors and their trauma, and the injustices that they suffered is something that we inherit, whether we're aware of it or not. And this will be controversial to some, but I want to be honest with listeners on the in-betweenish. I do think generational trauma plays a huge role in how Jewish populations who came from Europe post-World War II and after surviving the Holocaust, I think they projected their trauma onto Palestinians prior and post the establishment of the State of Israel. And I think this generational trauma has been largely unaddressed today within Israeli and Jewish circles. And in my understanding of the world, it's one of the reasons why genocide is being practiced with little to no shame, no remorse, and very little concern for Palestinian life and well-being. I will leave you with one final thought on a way forward that echoes some of the opinions shared by our guests. I fundamentally believe that the liberation of Palestinians goes hand in hand with the awakening of Israeli society to the gruesome realities that they are subjecting their fellow humans to. And if the statement triggered you, and if in your understanding that translates into the oppression of Jews, that's an inner conflict that you have to tackle. Because why does the liberation of one group immediately translate into the oppression of another? Can't we all be free? It's important to create space for hard conversations, to challenge one another, to educate ourselves, and to learn about the history, and not just the whitewashed versions of history. Up until 2010, I would say before the boom of social media, history was always historically written by the victors. One of the first things empires do when they rise to prominence is destroy the knowledge of previous empires, whether that comes from burning of books, destroying libraries, demolishing places dedicated to education, murdering intellectuals, and so on and so forth. Today, in the 2020s, history is now recorded and live streamed for everyone to see. The truth is undeniable. And today, history is no longer written by the victors. So long as we have the internet and we have social media, history can now be documented by the very people who have lived it and experienced it. These are the primary sources of our modern history. As a final closing thought, I just want to say, as a human race, we are all the same. No one group is better than the other or more deserving than the other. I encourage everyone listening to look inside and to question how they're upholding oppressive systems today, and how, on an individual level, we can decolonize our minds. Because change starts within first. In the show notes, you will find links to the articles Noor mentioned, written by Mohammed Al-Kurd about sanitizing Palestinian language, and other articles and resources that Zina and I have put together about the current genocide in Gaza. For this final episode, I want to express a special thanks to Malik El-Masiri, Ban Barkawi, and Ariana Martinez for their guidance, patience, and support in this On Palestine series. And a very heartfelt thank you to our guests, Zina, Faisal, and Noor, for being so open in sharing their stories and experiences of Palestine with me, and now with you. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon.